Hello, folks, and welcome to this, another episode of Socratic Citizen. I'm Patrick Cunningham, and it is Thursday, January 14th, the year of our Lord, 2021. So I spent a long time last night trying to research the conspiracy thing that we talked about yesterday, because I had said that when you marginalize a lot of these like conservative voices, or maybe I shouldn't say conservative, maybe I should say right wing, because conservatism is not really just a political orientation. It's also a state of mind. And in that state of mind, I think that it's kind of a common thing to prefer slow movement, to prefer measured action. And I don't think that that's something that the Trump movement is really known for. I think the Trump movement is known, on the contrary, for more radical action and being a little crazy. And we're going to talk about that because Trump is gone. But as we said here, his movement is not. And specifically, the House of Representatives, this next 2 years looks like it's going to be an absolute crazy house. So, as promised, I did some research on marginalization and radicalization. Good morning, public citizen. Welcome back to the show. And we're going to talk about what the consequences of marginalizing right-wing, Trump-oriented voices will be. And interestingly enough, a lot of the research that I found comes from research into the radicalization of Muslims. But before we do that, let's take a general look at what's going on here. So this is from Inside Sources, which is a pretty small publication. So it was just a really good article, though. Normally, I try to go for, you know, sources who can be verified, who are at least somewhere in the realm of reason. And I don't really know about these guys, but this article is really good. So we're going to take a brief look at this and one other thing, and then I've got some studies to look at from the research into how terrorism, like Islamic terrorism, comes about from years ago. So always good, I think, to when you can arrive at a similar conclusion using a completely different set of evidence. That's always a step in the right direction. So Inside Sources says the social media deplatforming purge will only make the internet a seedier place. So at the dawn of the social media revolution, our first instincts were on the money. Instantaneous communication, blogging, and social networks were the ultimate innovations for free speech. Millions of people were given a voice beyond the reach of traditional gatekeepers. It was glorious. Now that we've lived through two decades of this revolution, however, the gatekeepers have returned. And I should point out that many people have said that what's going on with platforms like YouTube, where, you know, you search for a political topic on YouTube, or you YouTube something that's been in the news, all of the first results will come from the major mainstream media outlets. You will get CNN, ABC, NBC, maybe C-SPAN, a little Fox News, and then on page 7, you get some independent YouTuber who might have 1.5 million followers talking about the exact same thing, maybe from a different perspective. Oh, public citizen, you did exactly what you said you would do. All right, when we get to the comments section here in a couple minutes, I will read this and we will talk about all of that. So Facebook has banned several controversial account holders from its site and related properties, such as Instagram, including conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, Louis Farrakhan, and a host of alt-right commentators. I should point out that this article is from a couple years ago when Alex Jones got deplatformed. It wasn't last year. It was a couple years ago. So the company says they've removed, as they're classified as, quote, dangerous individuals and organizations who promote or engage in violence and hate, regardless of ideology. YouTube underwent a similar process in March, shutting down the accounts of hundreds of conservative voices in response to pressure from activists who seek to deplatform those with whom they disagree. And in a way, it's difficult to place blame directly at the feet of platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. This is why I like this article, because unlike Ted Cruz, for example, these people are not just going to go for the most politically obvious answer. And I think that's always a good idea. So they're only reacting to the feverish outcry of politicians in Washington and the new mantra of social justice that pervades major cities across the nation. And I would add, because we're going to talk about what you just sent me, Public Citizen, I think that the fact that many of these large corporations go in for this social justice sort of thing would be my argument on why a lot of the institutions are leaning left nowadays. But like I said, we'll get to that and I'll read all your stuff and we'll talk about it for real here in a second. So banning fringe voices from social media networks may be popular among tech and political elites, but it will only further embolden the people with truly dangerous ideas. And then we've got some actual research here. This is NBC News writing about some other studies, and I like it because it's short, unlike the study that I slogged through, or the two studies I slogged through last night at like 20 pages a piece. You're welcome, America. Does deplatforming work? NBC says Trump's most extreme fans will find him, research says. So that's the takeaway from researchers who study deplatforming, the name for the sweeping form of digital banishment that Trump received from Twitter and much of the tech industry after a mob of his supporters laid siege to the U.S. Capitol. Trump joins a list of high-profile personalities, mostly on the far right, who have been banned from Facebook, Reddit, Twitter, YouTube, after repeatedly breaking these sites' rules. Excuse me. Conspiracy theorist Alex Jones is banned from most of them, as is far-right Milo Yiannopoulos. So, I never thought Milo Yiannopoulos was that important, frankly. I don't know why he got all the press that he did. He really was just obnoxious and flamboyant. But whatever, we're not here to talk about Milo. That was yesteryear, and we are in this year. So the past examples have given researchers a window into whether such moves are effective. But as a soon-to-be former president, Trump presents a unique case that may shatter expectations. There's anecdotal evidence that banished figures receive less web traffic and attention. So Shelmar yesterday pointing out that I was incorrect to say that marginalizing people presents a recruitment opportunity. So I have to retract that. I cannot say if you marginalize everybody, more people will become radicalized. In fact, most people will just go for whatever's easily accessible, whatever's in the mainstream. Most people, regardless of what Twitter does, will stay on Twitter. Now, my thing that I said had really two points. Hello, Shomar. I will get to your comments shortly. Let me go through all of the research that I have, because I'm very proud of having done this in a single day. So I was correct in saying that marginalization will increase radicalization, but not recruitment. And so this is exactly what these researchers say here. This is a doctoral student who is researching online extremism at a Swiss university, École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne. Don't make fun of my French. It's bad, I realize. Quote, it's likely that he will have a much smaller reach than he did on Twitter. So I was incorrect there. Than he did on Twitter. Without a megaphone to distribute his views on social media, Trump would have a difficult time influencing other media or finding new people to build his audience. His most hardened fans, though, will inevitably find a place to communicate and organize. And where's the good part? So these guys, they published a study in October examining what happened after Reddit shut down message boards, including not just the Donald subreddit, but there was another one called Conspiracy, and then another one called, I think, CTD or CDS, something like that, that was kind of the successor to the original Conspiracy subreddit. And what we found there, and this is the crux right here, there's a huge decrease in the activity and the number of members in reach of the community when these communities migrate to these new platforms, but substantial evidence that the community became much more toxic. And that, I think, is really the important part. So what we can expect, here is my corrected version of my statement from yesterday. Marginalizing people by pushing them out of the mainstream, those who are committed enough to find new avenues for communicating their ideas, will, as a consequence, become more radical, because they will end up in more radicalized circles where the kind of moderate voices have been purged, because those moderate voices stay in the mainstream. They choose to abide by Twitter's rules or Facebook's rules or whatever. They don't go anywhere. The marginalized people, however, end up creating, and this is from the study we're going to look at in a second, a cycle of radicalization where they perpetually radicalize each other, and it becomes just a feedback loop of increased radicalization. So it might be correct, therefore, to suggest that radicalization could lead, or marginalization could lead, to the kind of radicalization that might result in more instances of violence. You'll see less of people calling each other racial slurs on Twitter. That will be true. However, you might start to see the Proud Boys and Antifa become more active, or whatever other versions of those groups are out there, Patriot Prayer or whoever else. So this is the study I found. This is from the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism. And this is just a brief abstract of the actual study. But it says, belonging nowhere, marginalization and radicalization risk among Muslim immigrants. Now, before we dive into this, because I do consider myself to be more of the moderate voice, not a marginalized and radicalized voice. Therefore, I would prefer not to be marginalized. So let me just say, I'm not here to talk about Islam is dangerous and let's ban Muslims, so on and so forth. I did a big project on Islam in college, most of the facts of which I don't remember, so don't start quizzing me about the ins and outs of Islam. But I think that it is interesting to use this kind of stuff because this has been studied for years, and it was not studied in the context of, oh, who do you think should be the president? So there might be like a degree less of like politicization. In other words, there's, I think, to a lesser extent, people trying to like prove their point. And to some extent, you have government agencies, nonprofit organizations saying, what can we actually do about this? Specifically, to avoid going for the government's preferred way of dealing with things, which by and large has been to bomb everyone and kill everyone. And obviously, we're not really on board with that. So this is from the American Psychological Association, and it is a summary of the study. And the headline is, can discrimination contribute to feelings of radicalization? Lack of cultural identity, marginalization related to Muslim immigrants' support for extremism, research finds. That is not a sentence. Oh, lack of cultural identity and marginalization are related, there we go, to Muslim immigrants' support for extremism. So Muslim immigrants who feel marginalized and discriminated against in countries that expect them to integrate into their culture and society are more likely to experience psychological threats to their own significance. This is going to be a key concept right here. That could be related to increased support of radicalism, according to new research presented at the American Psychological Association's 125th annual convention. All right, now this does not really apply right here. We found that immigrants who identify neither with their heritage culture nor the culture they're living in feel marginalized and insignificant. So we're going to look at the study here in just a second, but the thought experiment I want to do is, let's say, take out in all of this, just in your own mental mind, take out the word Muslim and put in the word MAGA. And the whole thing with heritage and your original country becomes very interesting when you start to think of the way Trump people talk about America and American culture. And you could kind of posit that leftist culture, like the culture of the coastal cities, for example, as opposed to the culture of like rural Oklahoma, represent in a way like the two different countries. You have the new country, the cosmopolitan, liberalized country in Los Angeles, for let's say, versus the home country of rural Oklahoma, which is likely to be much more conservative and traditional culturally. So I have a couple key things. This is the actual study. And yes, I did read not all of this, but most of it. So I highlighted a couple things I want to read here. Experiences of discrimination make the situation worse and lead to greater support for radicalism. Violent extremism is a broad term that applies to threats emanating from a range of organizations and movements that use violence to pursue ideological, social, or political goals, including white supremacist movements, anarchist militias, eco-terrorists, and Muslim militants associated with terrorist organizations, such as the Islamic State of Iraq and Al-Qaeda. So, where is it? Evidence is strong that religion is not the primary motivator, so that's good to hear. In other words, it doesn't matter if you're talking about Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, or patriotic traditional Americanism, right? Many of them are religious novices or converts. Religion is sometimes used to legitimize personal and collective frustrations. And this can resonate with some people who relate to a collective experience of significance loss. Many people in the Trump movement talk about losing what America is supposed to mean. So I would argue that all of this stuff applies to Trump people and the MAGA movement, specifically that part of the MAGA movement that's likely to be sympathetic to things like QAnon, for whom QAnon represents maybe like an emotional truth, if not a literal truth. In other words, Democrats are so divorced from all the things that make me as a rural Oklahoman human, they might as well be satanic lizard people who are kidnapping children and drinking their blood and having sex with them or whatever. So anyway, that's the research that I found. So Shalmar, you were mostly correct in what you said, and I was 50% correct in what I said. So thank you for that. I'm always happy to research whatever it is that people have to correct me on. So let's take a look at some of these comments here. All right. Public Citizen says, my response to the claim. You know what? Let me read Shalmar's comments first, because he's actually talking about what we're talking about here. It says, when I asked for data, it was not to argue that those marginalized will become more radical. It's whether there will be a higher or lower number of radicals overall. Yes, and you were correct about that. A smaller yet more radical following could be less of a problem than widespread reach. So it seems like the solution here really has two components. One might be to find ways to marginalize to some extent the really extreme people, the ones who cannot be reformed, the people who are just never going to come back into the fold and play nice. But there are also people at the margins of those radicalized movements, people who might come back into the mainstream and want to play nice with Democrats, as long as we're talking MAGA people. Now, that doesn't mean vote for everything Democrats want. It means that we can still have discussion and compromise and work towards a kind of depolarization in the United States. So in one way, a smaller following would have less of a problem to some extent. On another level, a small group of super radicalized, isolated people who have this significance loss and they mutually identify with each other's sense of significance loss, that to me sounds like a recipe to some extent for violence. Shalmar says culture of the urban centers, not just coastal cities. That's an important sociological distinction. All right, fair enough, but you get the idea. So I like these new transitional slides. I like them as well. I'm trying to move towards a more segmented show that's a little bit more organized. All right, Public Citizen, let's take a look at this. So my response to the claim that the left has an inordinate amount of power in institutions, financial institutions, strong conservative bias. News media, strong conservative bias. Bernie Sanders' treatment is exhibit one. Entertainment media, purely populist. Whatever sells is what's promoted. Academia has a slight bias to the left. Religious institutions, strong conservative bias, more than our founders intended. Government institutions, strong conservative bias. I'm thinking that by DES means by design. And Alex Jones had a guest on yesterday claiming Trump is planning a coup next week. Pelosi will be arrested and he will be president for 4 more years. So let's address that one first. It really shocks me the extent to which these Trump people can still believe that Trump has something up his sleeve, the extent to which they can still believe that there's like hope somehow for Trump to be president. We're going to talk here in a second about the impeachment, but I mean, Trump is so completely done. It's unbelievable. He's absolutely out of the political discussion. The guy literally, he can't get a bank account. He can't get a government contract in New York City for his supposedly billion-dollar organization. The guy is done. And I'm happy to talk about what the Trump people want. I'm happy to say, how do we bring these people into the fold and like depolarize and de-escalate this situation? Which will involve, I think, giving Trump people something that they want. It's not going to be enough to just say, Trump's done, you guys all shut up, sit down, and start voting for Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, because they're not going to do that. But anyway, so Public Citizen, I hear what you're saying. Financial institutions, strong conservative bias. I'm looking, though, at these videos I've seen of like the diversity training from these financial institutions talking about everyone has to like announce their pronouns when they enter a room. That does not strike me as conservative. You could say that's not real liberalism. You could say that's not real leftism. That's like silly woke leftism. I don't know what your position is, but you could make that argument. But it still seems to me that that's not conservatism, at least not cultural conservatism. Maybe if conservatism means just a bias towards keeping things largely the way they are, then okay. News media, strong conservative bias. I'm going to guess that you're not someone who thinks that Joe Biden counts as a left-leaning figure if you believe the news media has a strong conservative bias, because I feel like the news media does not treat Republicans very well. And I would be curious to hear your thoughts on the news media treatment of the Antifa and Black Lives Matter protests that degenerated into riots over the summer. Entertainment media, purely populist, whatever sells is what's promoted. I don't know about this. You know, I think what we're going to have to do is what we did today, and I'm just going to have to do a segment on how do the institutions lean, and I'll make my case that a lot of the institutions have a leftward bias because of the woke stuff they go in for. I don't think they're socialist, and I don't think they're big fans of Bernie Sanders either. I'll agree with you there. Academia. See, I was under the impression that academia was really leftist and that conservative student groups have a big problem with just like existing. Religious institutions, yes, strong conservative bias, absolutely there. Though I'm not sure about more than our founders intended. I'll have to make that part of my research. So we'll do a segment on this and we'll dive in a little bit more into that. Public Citizen says, give them the damn wall. Honestly, yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea. I mean, you'd make the really, like, the right-wing people super happy. You can always put doors in the wall, and you let as many people through the doors as you want, unless you're just a big fan of illegal immigration, which is a weird position to my way of thinking. Shailmar says, where you draw the line is what matters. The left have decided to quarantine the entire Trump movement as those who didn't play nice, and their Lincoln Project friends across the aisle see the solution as restoring the old GOP that does play nice. The problem there is that's not going to happen. News media treats Lincoln Project Republicans very well. Yes, they do. So we'll come back tomorrow. We'll have a segment on the institutions and how do they lean? And I'll use your list, Public Citizen. I'm going to use this list right here. Financial, news, entertainment, academia, religion. Actually, probably not religion because we agree. Maybe we'll talk. Maybe I'll look at some Federalist Papers and see what they had to say about religion. And then government institutions, like bureaucratic institutions. Obviously, the House and the Senate and the judiciary are whatever the people occupying them are. All right. So let's dive into the next topic here, which is my classic love of fun articles. But the first one's not super fun. It actually goes into our discussion of marginalization, because I think the marginalization of MAGA people has been starting, and it does not look good. So the Postmillennial reports that a former Trump staffer was fired from his new job at a jet company after the National Hockey League allegedly complained about his work history. Not the best headline, as we'll see here in a second. So a former 2020 Trump campaign staffer posted to his Twitter account on Tuesday alleging that he was fired from his new job because a client to the company found out that he worked on President Trump's reelection efforts. And of course, this begs the question, what are we as a culture interested in firing people, denying them whatever? I know if you go to conservative circles, they say it's only a matter of time until we, the conservatives, cannot get bank accounts anymore. I heard somebody else say, what happens when you as a conservative are not allowed to buy land, thinking like, oh, you can't even go live off the grid because you were a conservative. But anyway, so according to Town Hall, Buchanan worked as a contractor and handled the coordination of Trump's rallies. While doing so, Buchanan established a relationship with Private Jet Services, a private jet company, predictably. Buchanan claimed that he was hired in January, then fired after the National Hockey League, another PJS client, found out about his past work experience. Now, obviously, because I'm looking at the Postmillennial, and because this is someone posting to his own Twitter account, it would be very easy to make the argument, oh, this person is just a disgruntled employee. This story is not complete. There's another side to this. Inevitably, there's another side to every story. But as we saw when we were looking at the study about the radicalization of displaced Muslims in new countries where they don't feel like they fit in, all you need is a feeling of a significance loss. All you need is that feeling of, I've been marginalized. I'm not important. This country's not for me anymore. And I think a lot of Democrats have been pushing the idea, America's not for you, Trump people, conservatives, like AOC talking about all the southern states. They're not really red. They're just suppressed. And if you, I don't know, if you ended voter suppression, which I guess to her means no voter ID, universal mail-in balloting, make it super easy to vote, then all these states would turn blue, which of course has conservatives running around with their hair on fire. So in an article from the Watauga Democrat, Buchanan said he has been a supporter of Trump since the day he descended the escalator in Trump Tower in 2015. However, he likely never expected that one day he would end up working for him. So here's really the key. According to the thread, Buchanan claims the National Hockey League threatened to cancel its contract with Private Jet Services unless they let him go. And this goes back to what we talked about yesterday. Do we really want to live in a society where you only do business with people whose politics you share? So I'm not sure what the ramifications of that will be. I imagine some of them will come out when I do some research later today on the institutions and whether they really are controlled by the left or whether they are indeed biased towards conservatives. So this is just interesting, and I'm kind of vicariously angry for the Republican House of Representatives members because I hate going through metal detectors. I hate going to the airport, and I hate to see them have to do it, especially because I know when you get elected to Congress, you got to get a little, you know, you hold your shoulders back a little bit, and all of a sudden, maybe you are, all of a sudden, maybe you feel like you're super important. But anyway, Pelosi announces lawmakers will be fined $5,000 if they bypass metal detectors to the House. So, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, oh no, let's go down here. Pelosi said the House will adopt new rules when it returns to session January 21st to mandate stiff fines for bypassing security, $5,000 for the first offense, and $10,000 for the second. The fines will be deducted from lawmakers' salaries. And I just have to say, no one who was like a member of the House of Representatives was rioting. You have that Lori whatever person, who Lori Boebert, I have no idea how to say her name, but she's talking about carrying in the Capitol, and she live tweeted that Pelosi had left the chambers, and they're trying to say, oh, she was aiding the rioters by telling them where Pelosi was, which is a stretch at best, I think. But it's not the representatives themselves who were rioting. And I don't know about metal detectors, but I don't think that they can be tuned to detect Trump support. I don't think you can walk through a metal detector and it'll go off if you, you know, think that Trump should have five terms as president. So the incoming fines for refusing to comply with new security measures come after numerous House Republicans berated Capitol police officers on Tuesday and Wednesday for asking them to go through the metal detectors. So we've seen, then this is a side note, but we've kind of seen the crashing and burning of the back of the blue thing from over the summer. Doesn't seem that that's super in vogue with conservatives anymore. Seems to me that perhaps, or maybe I should say with those on the right, not conservatives specifically, but they may not be such big fans of the police these days. So anyway, this term of the House of Representatives is going to be the most entertaining thing we've ever seen. It's going to be awesome. I am so excited to do shows for the next 2 years talking about this Lori Boebert, who is a firebrand to end all firebrands. She is the right-wing AOC times 1,000. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene, who appears to be the village crazy person, but this is just hilarious. She intends to file articles of impeachment against Joe Biden on January 21st. One of President Trump's newest allies, the Washington Times reports, in the House said on Wednesday night that she will file articles of impeachment against President-elect Joseph Biden on January 21st, his first day in office, for abuses of power. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene from my home state of Georgia. Actually, she's from a district that's about 100 miles, maybe 80 miles to the northwest of me. And if you get out there, you start seeing counties that voted about 85 to 15 for Donald Trump. It's super red country out there. So she cited Mr. Biden's alleged family business connections with China and Ukraine. So I would not be surprised if some of these representatives, and if they had like their own money, obviously, you know, some slightly wealthier people. I don't know how much money this Marjorie's got here, but they might say, you know what? Keep the paycheck. I'm not going through the metal detectors, and you can just keep it in fines. I don't think Nancy Pelosi gets to keep the fines and go buy whatever organic ice cream with them. But of course, there are other solutions, not just trying to impeach Joe Biden or announcing his impeachment before he's even in office. There's also Texas, which has its characteristic way of doing things. And as the bizpacreview.com reports, Texas lawmakers consider Brexit-like move in the wake of this socialism trend. This is not about war. I think if you have to remind people that it's not about war, then you are being somewhat warlike. Lawmakers in Texas say they are considering pursuing a Brexit-like movement as an alternative to living under what they see as rising democratic socialism. And they say lawmakers in other states have shown a similar interest. This is not about war. This is not about actually seceding from the United States. State Representative Kyle Biederman told Newsmax TV's Chris Salcedo on Monday after praising Americans from around the country for standing up and expressing themselves following the election. This could be interpreted a number of ways. This kind of sounds like BLM and Antifa referring to attacking police officers and burning buildings down as a diversity of tactics. claiming the election was stolen on Twitter and storming the Capitol are all just different versions of expressing yourself. So we have lots of crazies on all sides of the aisle, but I would be curious to see how a Texas secession might actually work. Because Texas, where is it? It's down here. Texas is different than the rest of the country. Texas is relies less on other states. Yeah, Texas is different from other states because it is essentially self-sufficient. It really could be its own country. And one could argue that they've only ever really had one foot in the Union. They were their own country, then they were part of the Confederacy, and now it looks like they want to leave again. And the state has its own power grid and its own gold repository. So that's interesting. And then North Dakota taking its own way of doing things. And there's been a bill introduced, as Breitbart reports, that would let censored citizens sue Facebook and Twitter, contrary to the protections that Section 230 is supposed to provide. Now, this is the sort of thing I think that is necessarily doomed to failure, because obviously the states don't have the power to, you know, supersede the statutes of the federal government. This represents, to some extent, the opposite of a nullification crisis, an un-nullification. I don't know what the word is, but you get the idea. So a proposed bill from Republican state lawmakers in North Dakota could see Facebook and Twitter face lawsuits from users who have been censored on their platforms. Some experts argue the law would have no effect due to Section 230, exactly what I just said. The law that enables, and this is Breitbart, so the big tech masters of the universe to enjoy legal immunity in cases related to censorship. Ars Technica reports that a new bill submitted by six legislators last week, titled An Act to Permit Civil Actions Against Social Media Sites for Censoring Speech, states that websites with over 1 million users would be, quote, liable in a civil action for damages to the person whose speech is restricted, censored, or suppressed, and to any person who reasonably otherwise would have received the writing, speech, or publication. This sounds to me like the beginning of what I was talking about, which is I thought that we should establish just a right to be free of censorship, public or private, where if you're calling for direct violence, if you are engaging in like a conspiracy to overthrow the government, existing laws can be used to remove you and prosecute you as you should be removed and prosecuted, because that's what being a country is. You don't let people just overthrow the government. Even if you believe in the right to revolution, you can't expect the government to recognize a right to revolution, right? That's like recognizing, that's like me recognizing your right to murder me. It doesn't make any sense. And then finally, just real quick, because I want to read some comments here, but the AP reports, and those of you who are on the left will be very excited to hear this, the real left, Public Citizen, not the woke corporate left. Michigan plans to charge ex-Governor Snyder in the Flint water probe. So as far as I know, Flint, Michigan is still without clean water. The problem in Flint, Michigan still have not been fixed, and no one has gotten in trouble. I know that it was Dana Nessel and Gretchen Whitmer talked about the necessity of prosecuting those responsible, and I think Nessel did go after a couple of people as Michigan's AG, but it looks like now you're finally starting to get some serious charges here. And of course, this would be Dana Nessel doing the charging here. So that's exciting for those who believe in such things. So let's read some comments here. Let me see if I can find the right place. The Lincoln Project, we read that already. Fat Daddy Sambo says, how is that legal? I'm assuming in reference to the private jet company firing the Trump guy. To specifically call out one person for firing has got to be harassment on some level. I suppose you might be able to make a harassment claim of some kind if this guy is at all serious and he's not just posting on Twitter. Because again, there's two sides to every story. Who knows what really happened? Really, we're talking about, the point of talking about the story was to talk about a feeling of marginalization. But anyway, to specifically call out one person for firing has got to be harassment. I'm not so sure about that in this particular political environment, because let's imagine the really extreme version that somehow, like, let's say I am like a genuine Hitler-worshipping Nazi with swastika tattoos, and I like to goose-step around the office and speak in German and quote Mein Kampf at people, and then somebody, a customer sees me doing this, and they say, I'm not coming here anymore. You got to get rid of this guy. This is unbelievable. You're hiring Nazis. All right, I realize that's an extreme version of the same thing, but I don't think there's any legal protections for that. And I know specifically that your employer can fire you for your political speech, right? Like the Civil Rights Act protects race, national origin, sexual orientation, so on and so forth, but it does not protect political orientation. That is not a protected, conservatives are not a protected class. I think maybe that might be a good idea to say you can't be fired for your exercise of the First Amendment, including activities, political activities, because I have a libertarian soul. But as far as I know, it is not harassment on any level. Shomar says, censoring my comment, huh? I'm not sure what of yours I censored, though I'm sure if I did censor something, it was deserving of censorship. Because, I mean, if anyone deserves the right to censor people, it is someone who does not believe in censorship, like me. But anyway, Pelosi should be fined for impersonating a human. Interesting concept. I would be more interested in just seeing her revealed as not being a human. I want to know what model of robot she is, or if indeed she is actually one of the lizard people. But anyway, Public Citizen says Trump has been so bad, it's easy to see why people are so sore. We need to show some grace, though. Conservatives are not my enemy. They are my family and friends. Public Citizen, I wish more people thought like this. I understand that people are sore. Trump was unprecedented in many ways, the most recent of which we were about to talk about. But I agree, conservatives are my family and friends. I sympathize with a lot of stuff that conservatives think. I'm reading, or I've been trying to read in like bits and pieces, Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind, which is like a history of conservative thought, starting with Edmund Burke. And really, if you look at the philosophical underpinnings of conservatism, they make a lot of sense. Like, I want people who have a conservative mindset working for my business. If I start a business, I want all the middle managers, all of the people whose job it is to keep the machine running, to be conservative. Not that I need them to support a border wall or vote for Trump, but the conservative mindset of prudence and virtue as the highest goods, as opposed to, for example, freedom or equality as the highest goods necessarily. If prudence and virtue are the highest goods, then those are people I feel like I can trust. Those are not people who are going to do crazy things. They're people who can be relied upon, even if perhaps they're not likely to be, you know, the next artistic genius with that kind of attitude. Fat Daddy Sambo says, buy a map. I don't know where I would buy a map. I think the maps are all gone. I think they've gone the way of the Trump supporters, and they've been marginalized out of society. It's 60 miles, to Marjorie Taylor Greene's district, and it's truly a different world. Floyd County is a bizarre area. Yes, it is. You go really 60 miles in any direction, 60 to 80 miles outside of Atlanta, it really starts to change around here. Fat Daddy Sambo says, "Bwahaha! Enough with the secession diatribe. That dead horse won't walk. The feds have multiple military bases in Texas. Firebrand legislators keep forgetting Uncle Sam wields the biggest sticks." Actually, interesting you should point that out. The article addressed that, both that and Pragmatic Rage, your comment, there's no mechanism that allows for secession. Indeed, there was some case in 1869 or 1870 in which I think the Supreme Court actually ruled that states cannot secede from the Union. But the article also addressed not only that, but it also addressed the multiple military bases where these Texas lawmakers said we would negotiate with the feds about the military bases. I'm guessing that they would allow them to keep the military bases there, and they would have basically the same relationship that Germany has with the United States, where we have military bases in Germany, but we're not, you know, an occupying force. Kind of caused a little dust up the last time it happened, Pragmatic Rage said. Well, that is correct, and I don't really know if this is actually going anywhere. It seems pretty doubtful, but I'd like to think that if it's not over slavery, or if it's kind of done halfway, or if it's done like Brexit, then there might be a potential, but in all likelihood, let's just live in reality here, in all likelihood, this is going nowhere. So, yeah, the secession, it is, to a large extent, a diatribe that is not going to have any thing like that. So Shelmar says Automod did it. You can uncensor it. Not sure why. Well, I'll do that here in a second because I am still a relative novice at all of this gear that I have downloaded for running these streams. But I will look at the censorship settings that I have on after this and we will fix that. It's because censorship is evil and you should be allowed to use racial slurs or whatever it was you were doing that the auto mod caught. So let's go to our final topic for the day, which is the thing that is on everybody's mind everywhere. And that is, of course, the impeachment. Trump is now the first president in American history. Well, he's the first president to do lots of things, but he is the first president in history to be impeached twice. Kind of a big deal. We'll have to see if he actually gets convicted and what's going to happen with the Senate trial. So Trump has been impeached, the U.S. News reports, for the historic second time 1 week after the Capitol riot. The House on Wednesday impeached Donald Trump over his role in last week's U.S. Capitol riots, charging him with incitement of insurrection and taking the unprecedented step of impeaching a president twice during his time in office. So it basically just runs down the reasons why he's been impeached, namely incitement of insurrection. And the House ultimately voted to impeach in a 232-197 bipartisan vote. Now, by bipartisan, they mean 10 Republicans voted for it. And we're familiar with kind of who those Republicans are. I believe whoever replaced Justin Amash voted for it. And Justin Amash was the only Libertarian in government. I was a little surprised to see that because I was inclined to think that perhaps impeachment was the wrong way to go. I stood with Jonathan Turley, who I've used a lot on this show. He contributes to Fox News and a couple of other places, saying that maybe censure was the best way to go and that impeachment right now is really just about preventing Trump from running again, which is also a moot point because Trump can't run again. Let's live in reality here. His political career is destroyed. He is the most canceled person in the world at the moment. I think it would be easier to get a bank account or a social media account as a member of ISIS or a Mexican drug cartel than it is for President Trump right now. And that represents a lot of what's going on. If you are a Trump person, then as before I was saying, let's live in reality and not say that Trump is going to be inaugurated on January 20th, because no matter what happens, that is not going to happen. let's have another moment of reality here, because I, like Public Citizen, while I don't agree with everything from the Trump movement and the Trump years, I do sympathize with a lot of stuff, especially the anti-establishment sentiment. I, like many people, am not a fan of the establishment. I do agree with the characterization of Washington, D.C. as indeed a swamp, and I'm happy to see just about anyone who wants to fight against that, because politics makes for strange bedfellows, and this is one of those cases. So let's take a look at what else is going on with this impeachment. Trump's approval rating has cratered, according to Politico, though they use the most extreme language possible. I don't know that cratered is the right word. So President Donald Trump's slide means he will leave the Oval Office historically unpopular compared with most of his predecessors and compared with his normally rock-solid 43 to 45% approval rating, which he has maintained more or less throughout his presidency. So tarnished by last week's riot at the Capitol, Donald Trump is ending his presidency with his lowest ever poll numbers. A new Politico Morning Consult poll pegs Trump's approval at just 34%, the lowest in 4 years of tracking opinions of the president's job performance. More than 6 in 10 voters, 63%, disapprove. And of course, that lines up also with the majority of Americans backing impeachment, as CBS reports. Even as they widely condemn the violence at the Capitol last week, Americans say there could be more to come. 74% think it is at least somewhat likely there could be more acts of violence attempted next week during President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration. 70% of Americans don't want to see President Trump's supporters hold protests next week. Most of Trump's 2020 voters, who are less likely than American voters overall to think violence is likely next week, would favor protests. So the Trump people are saying that basically there won't be violence if we protest. We think there should be more protests because Trump is still our guy. But I think the time has come to start thinking about what this movement looks like beyond Trump. I meant to say, that was supposed to be my point from earlier. It's time to think about what can, if you are a part of the Patriot movement or the MAGA movement, or you are such a person, or if you're just an anti-establishment person who love Trump because you hate the government, as many Trump supporters did, the time has come to think about who comes next. How does the succession work here? Who is the new leader of the movement? Because this is a movement and it's not going anywhere. But to continue to hold on to Trump, I think, is going to hurt the movement more than it's going to help the movement. So Democrats and independents are largely in favor of impeachment to prevent Donald Trump from running for president again, to send a signal that his behavior was wrong and show the world that democracy will defend itself. So in other words, a largely symbolic move. They find agreement on this from 15% of Republicans, while 85% of Republicans oppose impeachment and feel that it would create more division in the country. I would say maybe not more division, but it would probably contribute to that feeling among Trump supporters of marginalization. So the problem is this. The Daily Wire reports that McConnell has rejected an emergency session on impeachment, all but killing push to oust Trump. Now, this is not quite correct. So McConnell says he's not, going to convene the Senate early. He's going to wait until the Senate comes back into session on, I believe, the 19th before they can have any impeachment hearings, which means that impeachment hearings would go past the end of Trump's actual term in office. Now, McConnell does not mean that McConnell loves Trump and wants him to stick around. He says he's undecided on his impeachment vote and he wants to listen to the arguments, which might be a soft way of saying, yeah, I'm going to vote for impeachment. I just can't come out and say that yet because I'm not a Democrat. So, and then I've got these two articles here, though I may not have time to get to them all. but these are both from the Washington Post, and it's two sides of the argument. Can Trump be impeached after he leaves office? Because if he leaves office, that's really the only question at hand. I think there's probably enough support in the Senate to impeach him if we decide we can legally impeach a president who has already left office, which would result in him losing the ability to run for office again, kind of a final nail in the coffin of Trump. And then secondly, it would take away Trump's Secret Service protection, his staff, his pension, so on and so forth. Kind of like peeing on the coffin after the last nail is in it. So this is the pro side. The Senate can constitutionally hold an impeachment trial after Trump leaves office. From Lawrence Tribe, who is the Karl Loeb University Professor Emeritus at Harvard Law School, and most recently the co-author of To End a Presidency, The Power of Impeachment. The Senate appears unlikely, he writes, to take up the article of impeachment against President Trump before his term ends next Wednesday. That does not require the end of proceedings against him. The Senate retains the constitutional authority, indeed the constitutional duty, to conduct an impeachment trial against the soon-to-be former president. Shalmar does not like Lawrence Tribe, but we're going to look at both sides, so calm down. It's going to be okay. The Constitution provides that the president and other civil officers shall be removed from office following impeachment and conviction by the Senate. Some scholars, most prominently former Federal Appeals Court Judge J. Michael Luttig, whose article we're about to read in a second, have argued that because Trump's term will have already ended and he, by definition, cannot be removed, the impeachment power no longer applies. With all respect, I disagree. The Constitution references impeachment in six places, but nowhere answers that precise question. I don't think it ever came up. Article 1, Section 3 comes closest to delineating the contours of the impeachment power, instructing that judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. And this is the key to the argument. I've seen this in a couple places here. So he might be a crank and an anti-Trump hysteric, as Shalmar says, but this argument has appeared in multiple places, not all of them cranks and hysterics, I don't think. The idea that removal and disqualification are analytically distinct and linguistically divisible. Their divisibility was first established by the Senate during the 1862 trial of federal-turned-Confederate Judge West Humphreys and reaffirmed by a parliamentary inquiry during the 1936 trial of impeached Judge Halsted Ritter. Now, I don't want to go into all of that. It's really, this is the key right here. You can impeach to prevent them from running again, or you can impeach to remove them, I suppose, without disqualifying them from running again, or you can do both. So let's look at the other side here in these last couple of minutes of our hour. Also from the Washington Post by J. Michael Luttig, who served as a judge on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit from 1991 to 2006. Once Trump leaves office, the Senate can't hold an impeachment trial. So it appears that even if the House of Representatives impeaches President Trump this week, the Senate trial on that impeachment will not begin until after Trump has left office and President-elect Biden has become president. That Senate trial would be unconstitutional. So House Majority Whip James Clyburn said that while House Democrats would take up articles of impeachment this week against President Trump, the House might delay sending to the Senate any articles, I lost my place, passed by the House until after President-elect Biden's first 100 days in office. Now, this seems unlikely, I think, after in recent developments. Biden proposed an alternative under which the new Senate would immediately begin working on his legislative agenda and confirming his cabinet appointments in the mornings. and conduct the impeachment trial in the afternoon. So the sequencing of the House impeachment proceedings before Trump's departure from office and inauguration of the new president, followed by a Senate impeachment trial months later, raises the question of whether he actually can be impeached. The Constitution says no. Once Trump's term ends on the 20th, Congress loses its constitutional authority to continue impeachment proceedings against him. Now, I don't really have a clear answer on this. I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know how we're going to figure out what the answer is. I suppose this is one of those things we're going to have to figure out as we go and then kind of retroactively say, okay, here's the principle we're going to follow now because this is what we did. Here's the precedent we've set. So Trump is now the first president ever to be impeached twice. That is historic, not really in a good way. And I think it solidifies the fact that Trump's political career is dead. So let's read the last round of comments here, and then I will leave you all for the rest of the day to go do more research. So the irony is, Public Citizen says, the evidence against Trump for the first impeachment was overwhelming, including testimonial and direct evidence, while the impeachment evidence in this case has more room for argument. And why aren't we impeaching the congresspeople who also called for direct action? Now, it's interesting you use the phrase direct action because that was, in general, a phrase used over the summer to talk about the kind of violence that took place over the summer, much of which was tacitly supported by many people in the government. And of course, at the risk of being accused of whataboutism, I think if you go after one, you have to go after all of them. And this discussion should really hinge on the relationship between politicians and violence of all stripes, and that you are just as liable. If you're liable as a politician for what happened at the Capitol, you're also liable as a politician for people setting cars on fire when you talk about systemic racism in the United States. It's got to be either both or neither. I tend towards neither. I tend towards a kind of, like, you might call it a strict constructionalist interpretation of incitement. So, but yeah, you're right. If we're going to impeach the president, we should impeach everybody who said the same stuff he did. And we should agree with Eric Barnard from yesterday, and we should be disbarring Rudy Giuliani and kicking Hawley and Cruz out of the Senate. You've got to do all of one thing or all of the other. We can't just impeach Trump because we don't like him and give everybody else a pass, even though they did the same things. Shalemar says, all this bellyaching about suppression of the right when Obama left office with the highest approval, turns out even the silent majority liked him. That is interesting. I'm not sure what these two things or how these two things are related. Bellyaching about suppression of the right. Okay, fair enough. Big tech censoring people, guys getting fired from their jobs. Then when Obama left office, he had the highest approval rating. Turns out even the silent majority liked him. Maybe this is just a product of, or no, you have more. Shalemar says, it may simply be that the right is not as popular as they believe, and the suppression of their movement has more to do with encroachment on their undue say in public matters. Now, of course, this goes into arguments like, oh, the Senate favors Republicans because it gives every state equal representation. There are more Republican states, or at least an equal number of Republican states, but the liberal states or the left-wing states are more populous generally, which is why the House tends to be Democratic. Pragmatic Rage says, maybe it's just that Trump is unlikable. I've seen some arguments that point out that some Republicans down ticket actually did better than Trump did. And therefore, this gives the idea that perhaps these Republicans are themselves what is popular, and that perhaps voters are voting against Democrats, but also voting against Donald Trump, that they like the traditional GOP, they don't like the MAGA people. It's not entirely clear, but it is the case that Trump consistently netted a lot of dislike. I've heard people say he was the most popular Republican president ever. I know that within, like, the people who vote in Republican primaries, that's true. He got, like, 99% of the vote. But in the wider public, he's also one of the most disliked presidents ever. He is both the most liked and the most disliked president, also known as being polarizing. Public Citizen says, I don't want Trump to lose his Secret Service detail. The last thing we need is a Trump martyr on our hands. That would be, yeah, that would be kind of a really sad end for him to be assassinated because he lost his Secret Service detail. Also, that would look really bad for the people who impeached him. If they impeach him and then he gets shot, like, oh my God. Mr. Salty from DLive, welcome to the chat. Good to see the DLive people participating, sending videos of Pepe the Frog with his feet on fire. Interesting. Not sure what to make of that. Thug Life with those two people from the Chicago suburbs there. I think it was the Chicago suburbs. Not sure what to make of all these memes here. Salty Army, okay. And Trump giving a thumbs up. Well, you speak a difficult language to understand, Mr. Salty, but here's hoping we can get more from you in the future. Shomar says Lodig is less hysterical, but is a partisan rat and former Bush fanatic. Well, apparently you're not a fan of the Washington Post op-ed page, but nonetheless, they did lay out really kind of the broad strokes of the two sides. So maybe we can practice a little magnanimity and say, even though you guys are partisan hacks and hysterics, we can still listen to your arguments if they're at least a little bit within the realm of reason, which I think both of those arguments were. Mr. Salty says lurking. That is, you are lurking. I think you should participate. Shelmar says, going back to your point about conservatives being told this isn't their America by AOC and others, that is their retribution for telling the same to various segments of society, religious, cultural, sexual, illegal, etc. They have consistently sought agendas that deprove non-conservatives of their own, or deprive non-conservatives of their own lifestyle. I think that to some extent you've got a point. If we go back to, for example, the 1960s with the insurgent left and a more conservative country overall versus now we have a more liberal country and an insurgent right. It was certainly the case that it was illegal to be gay, to burn the flag, and being Muslim was probably not a good proposition if you wanted to be popular in the neighborhood. You were one of those Muslim Arabs who worship Mohammed and practice Islam. So Pragmatic Rage says Kentucky in 2019 elected a Democratic governor, but all state offices went GOP. Former incumbent GOP governor was unpopular. Fat Daddy Sambo says St. Louis, not Chicago. Yeah, okay, yeah, St. Louis. But you guys know who I'm talking about. Public Citizen, LOL, you speak a difficult language to understand, Mr. Salty. Yes, it is. I don't really speak meme that well. I get the general sense of what he's trying to say, but, you know. Shomar says Muslim Arabs isn't 1960, it's Bush's America. Same with 2011 gay rights. I have to say, though, you look at the numbers on gay rights now, that it's like it's a foregone conclusion. I think the only people who are still opposed are the evangelicals. I think even the Catholics have come around on gay marriage. And they're like, look, as long as I don't have to get gay married, I'm fine with it. It's really only the evangelicals who want to legislate their sexual or put their sexual morality into the law. So I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but I don't think we're going to be, unless this conservative court gets real activist real fast, I don't think we're going to see a return to pre-Obergefell world. So anyway, we've overstepped the hour because I'm just so excited by this new format. It's so much fun. So we will be back here. All right, last comment, and then we're going to be done. Shomar says the evangelicals are an uncompromising threat within the Republican Party that many do not view as people they can work with. Well, I guess we'll have to see what happens there. So we have come to the end, see you, Shomar, of this hour. We will be back here tomorrow to talk about whether institutions are controlled by conservatives or the left generally in the United States. For those who are listening to the podcast version of this later, you can catch this show live 9 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, Eastern Standard Time. You are welcome for my hard work in preparing. It's actually a lot of fun. I bellyache about it being hard and I'm all this hard work I'm doing, but it's something I would probably be doing anyway. So if you're watching on YouTube, then subscribe. If you're watching on Twitch or DLive, then give us a follow. And of course, share this channel like it's the unearned wealth of your ancestors. Mr. Salty, have a good day, citizens. Likewise to you, Mr. Salty 420. So thank you all for watching. This has been another episode of Socratic Citizen.